The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the August 2025 Walter magazine. We begin with the cover story, an unlikely romance between a group of Raleigh families and a storied Italian castle with Arezzo Revival by Addie Ladner. In the early 1300s, Italy's most famous poet, Dante Alighieri, was accused of corruption and fled to the Casentino Valley, about 45 miles south of Florence. Legend has it that he took refuge in the Castello di Porciano, one of many castles owned by the Guidi Counts. The castle sits more than 2,000 feet above sea level, the highest point in the valley. There, Dante began writing some of his most famous letters, including to princes and the people of Italy, to the Florentines, and to Henry VII. When Florentine troops came searching for him, they encountered a man they took to be a villager and asked him if he'd seen the poet. "Well, he was there when I was there," replied Dante. It's a favorite local tale. Today, the stone walls still stand. The castle tower and its accompanying stone cottages, collectively known as Porciano, overlook a valley dotted with olive groves, laurel trees, and stone houses. Gravel roads trace through wild patches of lemon balm, blueberry thickets, and native irises. But its latest chapter, as an immersive overnight and dining destination, is one with Raleigh roots. About 15 years ago, Raleighites Will and Molly Volkler decided to get married in the Casentino Valley. Raleigh native Molly had first visited Italy as a teen on a school trip, then went on to earn both bachelor's and master's degrees in the language and teach it at the college level. The two were married at Castello di Papi, a grandly restored Renaissance-era estate, but stayed at the nearby Castello di Porciano in the province of Arezzo. In this area of Tuscany, castles are fairly common, a remnant of the days when prominent Italian families erected giant structures to keep watch and defend their land. While at the Castello di Porciano, they befriended Martha Specht, the Countess. Though Italy doesn't officially recognize noble titles anymore, she was, for all intents and purposes, the Lady of the Castle, which had been in her family since the 18th century. For Martha's parents, Porciano was a love story. Her mother, Flaminia Goretti di Flamini, came from an aristocratic Florentine family. Flaminia met Martha's father, George Specht, after World War II. He was a Minnesota country boy who became a lawyer, then joined the army, serving in Africa and Italy. Flaminia had volunteered as a Red Cross nurse, and the two met at a party for Allied forces celebrating the end of the war. In the early 1960s, Flaminia and George embarked on a grand adventure to restore the castle of Porciano, which was nearly in ruin due to an earthquake in the early 1900s. As an adult, Martha used the tower as her family's private residence to enjoy time outside of Florence, and used the cottages, acquired by her parents in the late 60s and 70s, as vacation rentals. But by 2020, she was looking to sell the castle. She'd attracted an investor from New York who was offering a nice price, but it didn't feel right. "It became too much for me to continue running, but I wanted someone who'd appreciate its history and carry on my family's legacy," she says. In the meantime, the Volkers and Molly's parents, Betsy and Jean Conti, had begun visiting the area every summer. They bought a house in the area in 2013 and had become friends with Martha. Knowing that the Contis had come to love the culture and community of this region, Martha approached the couple with the idea of selling them the castle. Being such a big, multifaceted investment, including not just the tower but the cottages as well, they knew they would need more than just their own resources. The Contis and the Volkers started working to put together an investment group, all close friends or friends of friends based in North Carolina, to help acquire it. It was important for us to put together the right group of people who would appreciate something like this and would work well together, says Will. In December 2021, the sale went through. To manage the property, the Volkers sold their house in Oakwood and moved to Italy with their two children, Liam and Daisy, then 7 and 4. Though they didn't have experience in hospitality management, they were eager to immerse themselves in the trade. Since then, they've painted walls, refreshed appliances, added local artwork, and opened up the spaces. The Volkers learned to navigate multiple levels of approvals, plus the local culture, not just requesting a permit from city council, but going through the art and historical superintendent, working with a local architect, and allowing the locals to have a say in everything, from the materials used to the windows to the placement of structures. Everything is done in a very serious way to maintain the historical look, says Molly, noting that the castle and all the cottages maintain their original stone and ironwork. Today, Porciano is essentially a small village that can accommodate about 30 guests between the tower and its 7 cottages. The tower has 5 floors with a small museum on the first 2 and private living and guest spaces on the other 3. In one bedroom, a rare wooden Madonna from the Veneto region hangs on a wall, and a 14th century headboard from a convent anchors the bed. The cottages, most 2 stories and all connected in a row, finely balance 14th century elements like exposed stonework, wooden beams, and still life paintings with the comforts of modern hospitality. In 2023, the team converted a nearby ancient barn into a 20-person restaurant and brought on a local, Catalin Lupa, as head chef. Visitors to Porciano may wake to the sound of locals working on a nearby roof or the aroma of Concord grapes from an arbor nearby. A 20-minute walk into Stia, the small town down the mountain, offers a glimpse of rural Tuscan life. Visitors enjoy long, leisurely lunches, pop into shops, and take respite inside ancient churches. School children play in the piazza, the Volker children, Liam and Daisy among them, now fluent in Italian and indiscernible from other kids popping into the gelato shop. I'm so grateful that these lovely people have taken over the castle, says Martha. They're continuing this love story that connects Italy and the States. This article was edited for Time. Next, from the art department, Warp and Weft, the color-jangled paintings of Barbara Campbell Thomas by Liza Roberts. The paintings of Barbara Campbell Thomas are often warped, subtly but unmistakably. Their geometry, the linear shapes and pieces and colors that comprise them, have a slightly distorted quality. Rectangles are implied, but some appear to have had a bounce or inhaled a lungful of air. Others seem to have been shaken up or spun around. That's partly due to the kinetic energy they capture, which seems to indicate recent, even ongoing, movement. It's also because they are surprising. Campbell Thomas calls these works paintings, but a careful look makes it clear they're made mostly of pieced fabric. They're quilt-like, hand-sewn, dimensional, stretched in unexpected ways, and then painted. The pulling and the tension is still an important part of it, she says. It's become even more magical. I spend all of this time in this initial phase, and I kind of have an idea of what it's going to look like when I finish. Then I put it up, and it's interesting to see what has been pulled and how the image has come to life in a different way. Campbell Thomas is the director of the School of Art at University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and has taught there for more than 2 decades. Her resume is filled with solo and group exhibitions at museums and galleries around the country. Last year alone, her work was shown in solo and two-person exhibitions in Chicago, Illinois, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Charlottesville, Virginia, and Columbus, Ohio. She's been awarded a number of prestigious residencies, including the Virginia Center for Creative Arts, and has been a recipient of a North Carolina Arts Council Fellowship. When she takes on a new body of work, like the 10 paintings she's currently preparing for a November exhibition at Charlotte's Hidell Brooks Gallery, she approaches it with the business-like, step-by-step planning of a senior academic administrator, but she executes that work with daring and intuition. Campbell Thomas has learned to navigate this duality effectively with time, even as her art has become increasingly complex and her process more fully immersive. The piecing and sewing portion has become more complicated and elaborate, involving a lot more small pieces of fabric, she says. I'm understanding that layer of the process in a deeper way, so I'm spending more time in that part of the process. The stretching of the pieced fabric, which creates its cantilevered quality, comes next. Once this, quote, ground of her paintings is set, Camille Thomas hangs them all around her in her studio. In that way, her physical space can better reflect her headspace, she says, and then the imagery. I understand better what it wants to be. She can visualize how paint and collage will come together upon these sewn surfaces. The movement of the pieces feels like the big strokes, she says, and the collage will be how I refine them, add nuances, or cover things that need to be pushed down. The paintings become more refined. I begin to understand how to contend with the edges. The studio where she does this work, next to her house in rural Climax, North Carolina, is about 14 miles south of Greensboro. It's a color-jangled, layered collage of a space, overflowing with textiles, history, tradition, mysticism, books, paints, and threads and fabrics of every imaginable color, pattern, size, and shape. What's outside, the fields and trees and open expanse of nature, is just as important. I live out in the country, and walking has been very important to me for my whole life. Walking on country roads, being in a beautiful landscape, has always been a touchstone, she says. Lately, Campbell Thomas has been creating, quote, landscapes of a different sort. I've been thinking about inhabiting a body and what it means to feel somehow spacious internally. What would it be to create landscapes that are suggestive of our interior landscape? How do we create spaciousness for ourselves? The fractalized nature of her paintings, the way they often begin in the center and move out to the edges, is her way of representing that phenomenon. That's me grappling with the question, how do we inhabit interior spaciousness? Navigating dichotomies fuels other types of her work, too. The line where quilting ends and painting begins is another puzzle to ponder, as is the difference between a painting, or her version of a painting, and a quilt, a distinct form of art she also makes. It's something she's often asked about, and something she thinks about a lot. But even as piecing and sewing has become a more comprehensive part of her painting process, she's no doubt that what she makes are paintings. My orientation as an artist is born in paint, and the framework I still operate within has matured and evolved from an understanding of paint as a material, she says. That continues to inform everything. That dialogue began many years ago with her mother. She's the one who taught Campbell Thomas how to quilt, but it extends through her family tree to her grandmother and great-grandmothers, makers and stitchers and quilters all. Campbell Thomas has their names listed on her studio wall as inspiration and as a reminder of her heritage. The art journals she carefully keeps are bound with cloth covers made by her mother, who sends her a regular supply. In these journals, she examines her process and her purpose. Abstraction, she says, allows her to say things she can't with more literal or figurative types of work. I'm really fascinated with my sense that there's more to the world than what we can see. And of course, that starts to tap into realms of the spirit, she says. On the one hand, I'm engaging in this intensely material endeavor through paint, through fabric. But there's also this way that this engagement, which is now well over 20 years for me, is a way into spirit. From the music department, Hard Stop. Trey, spelled T-R-E, period, Charles, creates ethereal soundscapes with influences of R&B, alternative rock, and more, by David Menconi. A few months back, Trey Charles faced a tall order. It was this year's first Live After Five show, and he was the opening act, playing in daylight as a crowd gathered at City Plaza in downtown Raleigh. Early on, the crowd trickling in seemed inattentive enough that Charles resorted to between-song jokes to get a reaction. "I moonlight as a comedian," he cracked. Even though the vibe of Charles's music was better suited to darkness, the crowd gradually came around as the set continued. Applause grew louder with each song, especially when he'd play, quote, reimaginings or covers of songs by Bill Withers and Frank Ocean. Even the White Stripes' Seven Nation Army bathed in the reverb-drenched echoes of his guitar. By the end, he'd won the crowd over. "That was a rough one," Charles said a few days later. "One of those gigs where a bunch of people just want free music to dance to. It turned out fine, but it's always better to have an engaged crowd. One of the best was Newport. You could just tell everybody there wanted to experience all the art and stories." That was last year's Newport Jazz Festival, where Charles played alongside acts including former Outkast rapper Andre 3000, New Orleans soul legend Irma Thomas, and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Elvis Costello. Charles's music is similarly eclectic, equal parts R&B and 1990s vintage alternative rock. The piano riffs layered with chill, ethereal guitar soundscapes on his current release, Here We Are, owe almost as much to Cocteau Twins as the late soul man Ray Charles. Among Charles's fans is Haw River Ballroom co-owner Heather Lagarde, who booked him for a Saturdays in Saxapaha show earlier this year. To her, his music is, quote, poignant, soulful, gut-wrenching, and soaring, end quote. He means everything that pours out of him, Lagarde says. The music is so genuine and open, and you can see it costs him something to create and share from such a deep place. But he's willing to, and it feels like trust in both directions, from artist to audience and back. It's a communion with Trey, and the music is so intricate, precise, and sophisticated. Truly, Charles is unafraid to put himself out there. One of the tracks on his record is titled, quote, parentheses, the session, period, end parentheses, dash interlude, quote, a recorded snippet of an actual therapy session. Like all his titles and his name, the period is there for a reason. That symbolizes a hard stop, Charles says. It took some abrupt, dramatic, and traumatic stops before I got into this, so it's a good reminder, an Easter egg to remember why I do it and how I started. There are pivot points that life gives you, and you can respond to or ignore them. Now 34 years old, he was born Trey, T-R-E-Y, Charles Horton in upstate New York, and grew up mostly near Charlotte. The extent of his formal musical training was high school chorus, and his initial artistic path was acting. But that didn't work out, and he wound up working in restaurants. Then came one of those pivot points, a near-fatal 2019 car accident. While he'd been playing guitar informally, music became a more serious pursuit after his recovery. He taught himself how to really play guitar and record using what he jokingly calls YouTube University for training. Shortening his performing name to Trey, T-R-E period, Charles, he also took his first tentative steps toward music performance at karaoke bars and open mic nights. He stood out right away, a musician whose influences ran from the offbeat R&D of Erykah Badu to the anthemic rock of Bon Jovi to the dreamy pop of the Cranberries records his parents played. An alternative rock of sorts, contrasting ambient sonics with his husky croon. I always liked the lushness of big swells and reverb, music that evokes emotion, he says. The swelling reverb lushness is the easiest way for me to come to that. I always try for a bigger cinematic experience. Charles moved to the Triangle about 5 years ago with his partner, visual artist Mayanthi Jawardena. The bike mural on an exterior wall of Raleigh's Exploris Middle School is one of her works. They're both making a go of it as full-time artists. For Charles, part of that is live gigs. His recordings are one-man band affairs, where he plays and sings everything, but on stage takes other players. For his Live After Five show, he was backed up by Keenan Jenkins on bass and drummer Carl Jenkins, no relation. Charles has come a long way since his first tentative show years ago in Charlotte, where he was accompanied by a friend playing piano. I didn't know what I was doing, he says with a laugh. So I'd strum a chord, sing a line, rough. But now the band thing is a whole new dynamic because I've been used to doing everything myself. It's an adjustment. I'm making music as a form of therapy for me to promote being more human and more present. From the calendar, August 20th, 6 to 9 p.m., two favorite local acts with fresh albums to share will take the stage at the grand finale of Live After Five, Downtown Raleigh Alliance's summer concert series. Rock group Jack the Radio, helmed by George Haig, will kick off the evening with songs from 2024's Under Lonely Light. Then husband and wife folk duo Chatham Rabbits will serenade the crowd with music from their recent album, Be Real With Me, along with favorites like If You See Me Riding By and Come Home. This block party style show at City Plaza also includes food and drink vendors, retail opportunities, and more. The event is free. Visit downtownraleigh.org for more information. Lastly, August 28th from 4 to 8 p.m., local vintage and art market company Pop Up Raleigh has partnered with Morgan Street's The Bend Bar to host a lively evening of artisan shopping, music, and excellent drinks and food. State of Beer will be serving special summer small plates. Trunk Show Raleigh will be there with their suite of oddities. And, of course, the drinks from The Bend will be flowing. This event is also free. Visit popupraleigh.com for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonnell for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.